Welcome to the Days for Girls podcast, a show about breaking barriers for women and girls around the world. I'm your host, Jessica Williams, Chief Communications Officer at Days for Girls International. At Days for Girls, we believe in a world where periods are never a problem. We are on a mission to shatter the stigma and limitations associated with menstruation by increasing access to sustainable period products and menstrual health education for all people with periods. In today's episode, I speak to Janet Mbugua, Kenyan media personality and gender equality advocate with a focus on menstrual equality. She is a TV host with experience as a news anchor, reporter, and producer, both in her country, Kenya, and in South Africa. Janet is the founder of the Anua Dada Foundation, an organization whose mission is to create a supportive and accessible environment for primary school girls in Kenya. With a focus on menstrual health management, the organization has empowered more than 12,000 girls over the last few years. In July 2017, Janet began consulting for The Hive, a U.S.-based organization seeking to amplify gender equality messaging in Kenya and other African countries. In 2020, Janet released her first book, My First Time, a collection of short stories from women, girls, and men on their first interaction with menstruation. As you can tell, Janet is a powerhouse, and I cannot wait for you to hear this conversation. Now let's go on to the show. One of the things that you're known for, Janet, is being a news anchor and a reporter and a producer in both Kenya and in South Africa. But what I really want to focus on is the foundation that you started and your work as an advocate for menstrual health. So let's start first with the foundation, because I think that's really an interesting point. What inspired you to start the, and am I saying this right, Anua Dada Foundation?
Yes. Yep, oh, Anua Dada. You nailed it.
Awesome. Yeah, you did. Awesome. The Anua Dada Foundation. What inspired you to start that?
I think a lot of it was my work as a journalist. I've been a news anchor since 2007. So I did that for 10 years, both in Nairobi, Kenya, and Johannesburg, South Africa. And I think it was the last station I worked for, Citizen TV, which is the most watched TV station in most of East Africa, the East African region. What happened is, you know, you come across so many stories and social justice issues and political issues as a reporter and anchor. And so one of the topics that came up in a big way was not just menstrual health, but a bigger focus on period poverty. This was back in 2013. And it was probably the first time that an issue to do with menstrual health had been highlighted on primetime news on Kenyan television. And so it just became this massive conversation, because this is primetime at the most news, watched news station in the country. And it was because at the time our COO, you know, I think it helps that she was a woman who was passionate about these issues. We shut down all the male reporters in the newsroom who said, "You really want to talk about periods on the news?" And she said, "Yeah, we will." And we did. And the conversation came out showing girls in certain regions in Kenya using chicken feathers, goat hide, and so many unsanitary products in lieu of sanitary pads. And I brought that conversation onto a talk show that I used to host. And before I knew it, the whole country was invested in seeing that these girls get access. And so I told my boss, "I really want to do something. Why don't we raise enough products for girls, but also push for a change in policy?" And it worked. The pressure mounted so much that the government pushed the budgetary allocation from a certain amount and doubled it, simply because of the pressure that was faced and the backlash that they faced, because it was 2013 and a lot of citizens were thinking, why would girls not have access? But it stayed with me as a woman who had access to sanitary products, but also as a woman who's had a very problematic period for all her life. It just really, really stuck with me. These girls' stories, I was hurting for them. And so I founded Anua Dada Foundation in 2014 with the aim to give access for girls, especially in primary schools, for them to have access to sanitary products, but also access to information on adolescent health, on menstrual health, on their health and rights. And finally, to keep pushing for better policies to allow more access. And so did that for, had a very big year in 2014, And then over the years, just kind of did a lot more advocacy and then came back in quite a big way in 2019 when I did my book called My First Time, which highlights stories of women who, you know, who look like the women on the continent, just so that there's a relatability for girls that it's okay to have your period. Everyone has them. Everyone has a period story. It's normal, but there are issues to do with poverty, to do with pain. But let's normalize it and stop putting so much shame. And so My First Time is really a collection of stories from women and men. And I'm very proud of it, very proud of where it's taken the conversation. And now Inua Dada is also doing a lot to do with gender-based violence, women's rights, just a lot of human rights. But a big central part of it will always remain menstrual health and rights as well.
So does Inua Dada stand for something? What does that mean?
Oh, yeah. Inua Dada is uplifter sister. So Inua is Swahili for lift up and Dada is sister. So it's kind of, as opposed to helping a sister, it's lifting her up for her to realize her best potential. And I love the name because it just symbolizes the fact that we are here to lift you up so that you're able to realize that you can achieve what you want to. And we're here to guide you and we're here to give you access where possible. And so that's what Inua Dada means.
So I want to go back to 2013 when you're telling these stories on the news and about women using whatever they had around them to manage their menstruation. Take me there. I want to know more about that experience.
Oh, so it was a feature story. So it was done as a feature piece, a news piece. And what happened is the two reporters at the time, so it was really a collaborative effort between the COO at the time. She's now, a cabinet secretary and a mentor. But the COO, somebody called Judy, somebody called Lulu and myself. So Lulu and Judy went to the field. And they found these two girls in a region called Marigat, which is in Baringo, a county in Kenya. We have 47 counties. So this was one of the 47 counties. And, you know, these are girls who are aged between 11 and 13. And it was just heart-wrenching. You know, the feature kind of shows them plucking feathers from a chicken. Feathers from a chicken. And so they know they're going to cook the chicken, but they're not going to throw the feathers away. They're going to find a way to use these feathers somehow to act as a pad. And goat hide. The goat hide one really stayed with me because what it was is that you cut out goat hide in the shape of an underwear. And so you wear this goat hide almost like an underwear. And that's for the girls who are lucky. It was almost seen as, oh, you're lucky you have goat hide. At least you have goat hide that's shaped like an underwear that can at least hold you during your menstrual cycle for a while, as opposed to some of us who have to use chicken feathers and soil. And so they were narrating this. They were narrating that this is how they handle their menstrual cycle, that they have to miss school because obviously with the staining and how messy it is to use all these unsanitary products and with infections as well, they're not able to go to school. So once a month, every month, they're home. They're staying home because of the stigma and shame of staining because you don't have proper access to menstrual products. They don't quite understand what's going on. Nobody's really explained the menstrual cycle to a lot of girls. Even now, that was 2013. Fast forward to 2021. And this information is still a huge gap. So that's what the story was showing in 2013. And what happened is once the 7 minute or so feature aired, I believe it was between 4 or 7 minutes, it then came onto my talk show, which I was then able to bring on a panel of manufacturers and government representatives and ask, what is going on? How can that be their norm? And so it was just very difficult to see their experiences, given that they're such young girls. It shed light on why there's so many teen pregnancies, because they don't understand what's happening in their bodies. It shed light on why there's so much stigma, shame, and embarrassment at being a girl that age, because they don't understand their menstrual cycle. They're called dirty. They're laughed at. And so in many ways, it breaks the spirit of so many young girls simply because they don't have proper information to this very, very normal thing that's happening in their bodies. And so it was just very painful to watch. And it still is for me today. Just last year during COVID, I spent some time with some teen moms and pregnant teens and, you know, just wanting to hold them and say everything will be fine. And they say, we just wish somebody had told us earlier. We didn't know. We didn't know that the menstrual cycle is linked to pregnancy. So you know, a lot of work to be done. And I think that's what kind of keeps me up a lot is how do we get mass information sharing out there? And I'm happy that the conversations I have on my social media make a difference. It makes it normal to have conversations about periods and sexual reproductive health and rights. I use my forum in a very open and transparent way to discuss the issues that are quote unquote taboo, especially in a lot of African settings. But the world is opening up. The continent is opening up. It's a fantastic time to be here right now. Everyone's just so full of life and ideas. And so talking about such issues are welcome.
I love that you're open about your menstruation and modeling that behavior. That is so important for women and girls to see that.
Right.
I can't, as you're telling this, you know, I've heard stories like this since I started at Days for Girls. And I'm thinking back to like my own periods and those of my sisters and my friends. Periods are messy. And even if you have proper menstrual products, they're messy. I can't imagine having to use whatever is lying around. I mean, and as a like a privileged white girl growing up in the United States, I mean, there was still shame and stigma around it. So my heart also goes out to these women and girls. And I'm so glad that you're there as a mentor and a model. So let's talk about the Anua Dada Foundation. Your organization has made a difference in the lives of thousands of girls over just the last 2 years, which is so impressive. What impact or achievements are you most proud of with this work?
Oh, thank you for that. And I hear you, by the way, Jessica, about periods being messy. And, you know, just like you, for someone like me who has grown up having access ETC, it's still messy. It's still been painful. I've had endometriosis and I've had all these issues. And even now I have to manage my menstrual pain with birth control. And that's me with access. So it's always so frustrating for me that somebody out there is going through the same thing and doesn't have. So I just wanted to add to that. Yes, Anua Dada, especially in the first year, was able to reach just after Periods of Shame aired. We went, that was in, I think it aired in August. We went to Marigat, that region, in November. And we went there with the First Lady of Kenya. She got wind of it and she really wanted to be a part of that launch. And so we were there with my colleagues and it was a pretty big event. It was televised and over 10,000 girls benefited from that event. And so in that year alone, in 2013, going into 2014, there was about 12,000 girls that were reached. And then over the next few years, you know, we did more of the advocacy and then come again into 2020 with COVID, and we were able to reach just about 2,800 more. So I think, you know, sustainability is what has always been a bit of a challenge. But I always believe that even as we're looking for that sustainable option, whether it's reusable products, whether it's whatever form it will take, we still need to do the emergency intervention where possible. And that's a lot of the time what we focus on. When COVID hit, we're not going to say, oh, we can't give care packages because it's not sustainable. We're like, no, let's give care packages while they're able to get back on their feet and we figure out the next step with them or for them. And so that's something that the foundation is proud of being able to do, which is where there's a need, we intervene even as we're constantly seeking more sustainable solutions, seeking more interventions with regards to policy. So some of the achievements have been, you know, yes, the distribution of products such as sanitary pads and underwear and care packages to literally at this point, close to 14,000 or so girls and women, because in as much as we started by focusing on primary school going girls over the years, and especially last year, we started to really shift to women and girls because we realized these girls' mothers were also struggling. They didn't have access. And so sometimes they couldn't go to work. And then sometimes we extended that to the family with regards to, especially with COVID, the care package included food products, ETC. Because I just sat there and thought that there's so much of a struggle happening because nothing is certain with this pandemic. So that's been an achievement. I think the other one was, you know, being named by the Cool Chick Foundation's Menstrual Health Report as one of the top 8 organizations globally that's addressing, you know, menstrual health management matters, especially on the continent. That was huge. One of the things that I love is some of the work we've been able to do on the digital space. And even with regards to convening conferences and forums, just before the pandemic hit in February of 2020, I hosted the first and convened the first Menstrual Health Management Inclusion Forum. And that's because of a lot of the conversations I was having with differently abled girls and women from different orientations. And I was like, why don't we just all come together and talk about what access looks like for all of us, not just for some of us. And that we were going to do several more, but the pandemic had other plans, which is fine. We'll come back and do it. That for me was a very big achievement because it was something that I thought about and came up with and convened in 2 weeks. And we were able to have an attendance of about 200 people with a massive online trending conversation as well on the same day. That's another achievement. And I think one of the other ones I can mention, other than the book, because the book is also being accompanied by a podcast that's going to be talking about, you know, sort of like menstrual health management related issues and other sexual reproductive health and rights issues. The final one I can talk about is I hosted an online period party in May of 2020, and it got picked up by the BBC, and that was pretty incredible. You know, I'm a creative as well. I'm a content creator. And sometimes I just think about all the different ways that we can engage people. And one of the ways I've realized is bring these conversations to the events that people are already having, disrupt a little bit so that instead of having a period party in person that's done very formally with, you know, adults and children, bring it online. I asked people to come dressed in red and white and ask them if your period was a movie, what would it be called, which was a ton of fun. But even within the period party, we talked a little bit about you know, issues to do with periods. I spoke to a lot of stakeholders in the menstrual health management space, a lot of allies. And so it was an incredibly enriching session that I was so excited and proud of, especially because it got the attention of BBC Africa. So those are a few, and they just kind of fuel my fire because you realize people really want to have these conversations. People really want to help. Every time after I've done a post or, you know, a video, it's always, where do we go? What do we do? And so I kind of, you know, link people to the different, you know, advocates in the space in Kenya. There's so many incredible ones in Africa. And so, yeah, I think that's what I can highlight, Jessica. That's what comes to mind, I think.
I love now. It. Why? I'm like, when is this next period party? I want to go.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's have one.
I'll think about it.
Probably. Yeah, let's do it.
I'm like you. I'm a content creator. So I'm always looking for engaging ways to get people involved because let's face it, like menstruation isn't the most exciting topic, right? And there's a lot of shame and stigma around it. So how do we break that? Well, we normalize it. We, you know, create experiences where people feel like they can relax and have real conversations.
Exactly. There you go.
One of the other things that you're doing is you joined a US-based organization called The Hive, and they are focused on gender equality messaging in Kenya and Tanzania, and you're the Kenya advisor for The Hive. And The Hive is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So I'm really curious what about your work there. Can you tell me more?
Yes. So I stepped down from being a news anchor in 2017 for a while. I always say it's see you later, not goodbye. I know it's been 4 years, but still see you soon. And in 2016, Melinda Gates was in Kenya. And I interviewed her on my program just around women's and girls' rights. And so her team in Kenya and I had kept in touch. And so The Hive, based out of New York, incredible colleagues of mine, were looking to do a project around amplifying gender equality by using champions and influencers, and their country of focus was Kenya. And so I was really called in to be the project lead, which was interesting for me. And I think that was really, besides Inuadada, that was another way that I really began to, you know, get into the development space. But it was something I hadn't really done before, but because I happened to be what you would call an influencer who also happens to champion gender equality, it just made so much sense for me. So The Hive is, you know, Gates' grantee. And so they then reached out to me through the Kenya team to kind of be a part of it. And I've been with them since 2017. And one of the things that we were looking at is gender equality or matters to do with gender rights sometimes can be, you know, met with eyes being rolled or people saying, oh, there they go again, talking about gender issues. But sometimes we found that when certain champions or influencers discussed it, it kind of piqued the interest of their audience. And it's something that I think we've seen around the world. I think one of the people, when you think about, I was looking at stories of Princess Diana and, you know, a while back, and Michael Jackson, some of these celebrities who kind of mainstreamed, quote unquote, social issues. And so it's been there for a while, but I think it really became popular in the age of social media. Bono, when he championed matters around HIV/AIDS, he just kind of created such a huge conversation around it because he's Bono of U2. So anyway, fast forward, and Kenya isn't any different. You've had people who are in media, who are musicians, who are athletes. And I had to kind of select a dream team, quote unquote, of influencers who are already passionate about these issues. And yet, and so we come together and amplify gender equality matters together. That's kind of the crux of the campaign, which is called Better for Kenya, like gender equality is better for Kenya. And we've had some great, I mean, people like Adele Onyango, she's no longer with the project now, but she's a very good friend of mine, a fierce advocate. She is such a force to be reckoned with. She's a podcaster. She's a, you know, gender-based violence advocate. You know, she's a survivor of rape. She talks about it very openly. So she's one of the people I reached out to. People like King Kaka, who's a hip-hop artist who does a lot of work in menstrual health. Sharon Mundia, who is a lifestyle vlogger who also talks about economic empowerment. And so it was such an interesting take on what their audience knows them for. And then all of us kind of coming together and picking on different gender equality issues. So I've kind of led the project for a few years, and I've loved seeing it reach so many people across the continent. We've had a lot of moments, whether it's goalkeepers in New York, whether it's the African Union. We've had moments where influencers are now getting drawn into policy, but they come with a very different following and fan base. And that's also critical in mobilizing public engagement. So that's, in a nutshell, what I do with Better for Kenya through The Hive.
I love it. I went on your website, and there's some amazing photos out of The Hive and what you're doing with that campaign.
Thank you.
And it's the hashtag Better for Kenya, the number 4. So Better for Kenya, if people want to check it out. And it's very cool. I think, too, that's so important, because when you engage the public and you get the kind of the general public aware of an issue, then they start to put pressure on, our governments and institutions to set policies and legislation to support the issues, right?
Right. Exactly. People like athletes, yeah, and you put pressure on the government as well to follow through on commitments. And these are people who've got hundreds of thousands of followers. And so it just brings in, I think, it invites a different set of stakeholders, which is essentially the citizens of the country who sometimes feel locked out of public engagement. But through this influencer, who they watch or who they listen to, they now extend the conversation to then invite their following. So I think it's really smart, but it was really about looking for influencers who are already passionate, as opposed to somebody who may not be in the space of advocacy. And so we've stayed with quite a few from the beginning, and we've also brought on quite a few others. Pinky Gilani, who's been a media personality for 20 plus years. She's fantastic. Liz Marami, who's the first female marine pilot from East Africa. You know, so it's such a nice mix. Athletes as well. Tegla Lerupe, who was with us a while back, who's an Olympic, you know, medalist. So it's a really nice mix, and we just hope to extend that for a while longer.
So for people who want to connect with you, what is your favorite social media platform? Like where can they find you?
Definitely Instagram. I use Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook often. I kind of, if I'm posting something or sharing something on Instagram, I'm very likely to share it across, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And that's why the website helps, because everything is there. But Instagram is kind of where Instagram changed my life. It's so interesting. I think I joined Instagram in 2014 or 15, and I was just kind of mucking about with it and having fun with it. And before I knew it, you know, it just, it's such a world of opportunities, and I really transitioned with it, and it's become like my friend. I know that sounds so weird, but I hope, Jessica, you get it, because you're a content creator. So I evolved with Instagram and with my followers, and now I have, what, 1.1 million followers, which sometimes is very surreal to say, but official Janet Bogwa, at official Janet Bogwa, is where people can connect with me. I update pretty often. I also tend to take social media breaks, but I'm not going to do that much this year because there's so much development work to be done. But just, you know, I'm very good at sort of like protecting my peace and my mental health sometimes. And it would just get so hectic. But now I have a very healthy relationship with it because it's just an extension of my story and who I am. So, official Janet Bogwa is where people can connect with me. I love sharing the work I'm doing. Sometimes I'll share a little bit about my little boys or the family, but mostly for work. So that's where people can find me, or officialjanetbogwa.com for my website.
Awesome. And then for 2021, what's the most exciting thing, or the thing you're most excited about for the year that we could expect to find out more on your social media and follow you on?
There's so many. I would say the key ones are, Inua Dada, because I've always believed in putting sort of like girls or young people at the heart of their own issues, as opposed to speaking for them. So we are creating interesting chapters and with high schools and campuses so that young people have, we're giving the power of advocacy back to young people, equipping them with the tools to speak out and speak up. That's one. There's a lot of work we're doing around GBV and safe spaces, etc. That's quite sensitive and a work in progress. But finally, Generation Equality Forum is something that, you know, Kenya is the gender-based violence action coalition globally. So we're doing a lot of work collectively as a very big group of partners and organizations towards amplifying, you know, GBV, access to psychosocial support, safe houses, and really piling pressure on the government. So that's something I'm excited. I'm doing it almost every day. Even today, we were at a convening. Last week, I was at Korogosho speaking to social workers. So that's a lot of what people can be seeing on my timeline, the build up towards this, you know, big forum, probably in the summer. And the journey towards that is a lot of stories of survival stories from the community, and just kind of building towards sustainable solutions and finally giving survivors justice and access that they've deserved for so long. So that's a lot of what I'll be doing. My book is coming out again. I'm re-releasing an updated version of the book. So yeah, just very, very excited. It's a very busy, but very fulfilling and enriching season, I would say. So very excited.
Awesome. Well, we will put all those links in the show notes for sure, so people can connect with you. And Janet, just on behalf of Days for Girls, thank you for all of the incredible work you're doing in the world. And on behalf personally, I just, you know, I really appreciate it, because we need more and more women like you to join this movement. So I'm grateful.
Well, thanks, Jessica. I think what you're already doing by profiling these stories and conversations, you're already just sort of like a champion and ally in your own right. So thank you for allowing me to be in this space. I always just say I'm just constantly learning. I'm transitioning from media to advocacy, then kind of doing the two has been so interesting. And so I'm always asking, you know, how can I do better? How can I really make sure that there's impact? So no, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I've really enjoyed myself, and I look forward to speaking with you soon again, hopefully.
Me too, absolutely. The Days for Girls podcast is produced by Days for Girls International. For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit daysforgirls.org/podcast. If you'd like to support the work we do on the show, leave a rating or a review wherever you listen. Subscribe to the show and share episodes on social media or with your friends. To learn more about Days for Girls and to join our global movement, please visit daysforgirls.org. Thank you for listening. See you next time.